5 o'clock hour, the Mark Madden Show. Tim Benz in for Mark today, talking about the Super Bowl coming up on Sunday. We'll be at the Rivers Casino tomorrow from 3 until 6. Plenty to discuss on that front there. But before we wrap up today, I want to get a national perspective on the game from Jeffrey Chedia. He, of course, is a senior columnist for NFL.com. You can also catch him on the NFL Network as well. Jeffrey, thanks so much for taking some time to join us. I really do appreciate it. I know you're busy in advance of the Super Bowl, but one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, I thought it was a perfect time to dovetail something that you had written into some Steelers conversation in advance of the game. You wrote a really interesting piece about team building in the National Football League these days, and especially from a Philadelphia Eagles slant. Andy Weidel, formerly of the front office there, now kind of in charge of the player personnel aspect of the general manager's job that Kevin Colbert used to have, even though in title, it's all going to Omar Khan. Andy Weidel's going to have a huge influence on player procurement and scouting here in Pittsburgh. What did you find out about the Eagles and about team building in general in the NFL these days as it related to the research that you did for your piece?
Well, it's interesting. I think this Super Bowl represents two different philosophies on team building. One, you have the Chiefs, you know, with a franchise quarterback and trying to ride him as long as they can for championships, and then what the Eagles have been doing, which is basically what the Rams did last year and what the Eagles did in 2017, where you have a young quarterback on a cheap deal and you're trying to do your best to put as many pieces around him as possible. And I think what I learned from the whole process of doing that story was that there has been a shift, not just in how aggressive teams have become in the offseason and around the trade deadline, but also in terms of just understanding that the window for winning is different now. I think fans and owners are a lot more tolerant of a 4 or 5 win season if it puts you in position to have a run at a championship, you know, a couple of years later. Or if you win a championship, you have to go down to being a 7-10 team for a year or so. So I think that there is there's a lot less patience and a lot more comfort in the idea of what the salary cap is, with the way practice squads are, that you can make a lot of moves like the NBA does and still come out on top.
Are we ever going to get to the point when it comes to quarterbacks, as we did with running backs, where the value of the player no longer reaches a certain magnitude because, you know, almost the Yogi Berra thing, nobody goes there anymore because it's too crowded? Do we ever get to a nobody pays so much for a quarterback because it ruins everything else? Do we ever get to that point in the NFL?
Well, I think we're getting there now. And, you know, you mentioned Pittsburgh and I think Green Bay. Those are two of the franchises I think still are very conservative in how they build teams, prefer to go through the draft and maybe make a free agent move here or there. But, yeah, I think that those teams also have benefited from having quarterbacks in place for a long period of time. With Big Ben there and Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. You look around the league, I think most teams will tell you now that it's really hard to find those kind of quarterbacks or to find a Patrick Mahomes or a Joe Burrow. And it's even more egregious to try to turn a guy into that kind of quarterback just because you have to have one. I think it makes more sense to decide, okay, how far can we go with this guy? And at what point are we overpaying, compromising what we can do in terms of building a roster? The Baltimore Ravens are a chief example of that. They've got to decide how much can they get out of Lamar Jackson now, knowing that the next 5 years may not be as great as the previous 5 years.
It's interesting to hear you phrase it that way, because I recently wrote about this from a Pittsburgh perspective, in the sense that if you look at Kenny Pickett, and, you know, some of the comparisons and the hopes here in Pittsburgh that he can grow up and be a Joe Burrow someday. Well, yeah, there's a lot of hope there. You know, like there's a lot of presumption or assumption that he can be Joe Burrow. Similarly, that Pickens can be Ja'Marr Chase, that they'll ever have a number two like Higgins, that Najee Harris can be what Mixon was for the duration of his contract in Cincinnati. There's presumption there to all of that. Whereas I would think that the better comp or the better goal would be to build an offense like the one that's built in San Francisco. Like, you should be able to build offensive scheming to fit your quarterback, because I think of Kenny Pickett in an offense that looks like San Francisco's and I salivate. You know, like, that should theoretically be easier to do if you get coaches who know X's and O's instead of just hoping that you're going to get a Joe Burrow in the draft.
That's exactly right. And I think that's becoming more of of a belief. And you've seen this in with Minnesota, what they've done with Kirk Cousins, the people around him, people around Dallas, with Dak Prescott. And so there is, I was talking to Ray Farmer about this for that story, the ex-GM for the Browns, who's now on the Rams front office. He made a good point. He said, look, when you have draft picks, those are just picks until you attach names to them. So you really never know what you're going to have until you actually see guys on the field. And it's a lot more it gives you more confidence when you know what you're getting. You know you're getting an established product. So it's easier when you have those quarterbacks, Kenny Pickett's age, to say, well, hey, we can get a tight end who does X, Y, and Z. We can get another running back to complement what Najee Harris does. Or we can have a third or fourth receiver who brings something to the table that Pickens doesn't bring. And you can pick and choose what you want to have on that roster. And ultimately, nobody's going to care how you got those guys there. You know, that's the bigger thing. It's like, there used to be such a concern about, oh, we spent this, a second overall pick on the guy, or he's a first round pick, whatever. How can we? That stuff doesn't matter as much anymore, because it really comes down to, can this guy produce and can he give you what you need?
Jeffrey Chedid is with us from the NFL Network and NFL.com. Last thing on this, and then I want to get to what you wrote about Patrick Mahomes and talk about things from a Chiefs perspective a little bit too, but sticking with the Eagles for a second, in your conversations, did Andy Weidel's name come up much? Do you know what he thinks and how he thought in terms of helping to team build with the Eagles and how that might translate specifically to the Steelers and how they think about certain players at various positions and the level of weight you should put on draft value and financial value?
We didn't speak specifically about him, but I would believe he would bring some of those influences that Howie Roseman had in as general manager of the Philadelphia Eagles to that franchise. Again, I think Pittsburgh has proven over time to be more of, playing the long game. Like, we're going to go out and we're going to draft. They've been drafting the same guys for the last 40 years. The same edge rusher linebackers and tweener linebackers and, big offensive linemen. But I do think that he's going to probably bring some of that element of, hey, we can make some moves here and be a player faster. Like, this doesn't have to be a 2-3 year wait for Kenny Pickett to turn into something close to a Joe Burrow. And in fact, you have to be even more aggressive because the AFC is so stacked. So you can't afford to sit back and just, let's just wait and see what happens 3 years down the road. There's too many teams making too many moves. The Chiefs have been aggressive. Chargers, the AFC West has been aggressive in general. Certainly, you saw what the Browns did in going out and getting Deshaun Watson. You know that the Dolphins are going to do it. You know the Bills are probably going to still make some moves with Josh Allen on a bigger deal, but still trying to find people around him. So, yeah, I think he certainly is going to have to be a lot more aggressive than maybe people have been used to in those parts.
Does that include, well, I imagine it would, the thinking up front, just load up as much as you can with as many good, talented pass rushers and defensive linemen as humanly possible? Because I just think there's a disparity across the board in the NFL between really, really good pass rushers and nowhere near as many good offensive linemen.
Yeah, that's what the Eagles, I think, really have proven to really be ahead of the game in that. And you saw the Rams do some of that last year when they went and got Von Miller to add to that group there, Donald. That it's very hard to get good pass rushers unless you're picking in the top 10 in the draft every year. And so, guys like T.J. Watt, who go 30th overall, whatever he was, or few and far between, to be able to do what the Eagles have done and essentially just load up and say, we're going to have waves coming after you. That is a step towards the future.
Jeffrey Chedid is with us on the Mark Madden Show. Tim Benz in for Mark. Jeffrey, let's get to your piece about Patrick Mahomes. I want to get to the other side of the ball for a second and get to the Chiefs. What did you find out about the way he has grown and developed, and what have you found out about him as a guy in your exploration that has allowed him to become the quarterback that he is?
Well, I live in Kansas City, so I've seen him from day one, and I can tell you that when you have a quarterback like that, it's very easy for fans and even some players and coaches to look back and marvel at everything he can do. But the growth he's made this year is a huge step towards becoming what Tom Brady has been and Peyton Manning was for a long time in this league, which is being able to see the game and play with a trust in the offense that he didn't previously have. And he would be the first to tell you that when he had Tyreek Hill here and Travis Kelce, obviously still being here, that his mindset was play is called, but those are the guys who are going to make it happen for me. So I got to find a way to get those guys the football. And so he would be, you know, 1-2 in the progression and running around trying to find those guys. And now, because of so many new faces coming in, that he had to be more disciplined and he had to understand that teams aren't going to let me just have the big play all the time. And that mindset really cost him in last year's championship game. And this franchise was really upset about how that season ended. So I think he came in with a different perspective and more of a commitment to being more of a, not losing the improvisational stuff, but being more committed to trusting the offense, trusting the weapons, getting the ball out of his hands fast and letting that lead this offense.
Given the loss of Hill and some of the adjustments that they've had to make as a result, how was that process early on in the season, do you think?
Well, I think there were some growing pains in there. And, you know, when you run that kind of offense, I think the upside is the defense doesn't know where you're going with the football. The downside is you don't know who you can trust right away. So there were some players like Marquez Valdes-Scantling who had some inconsistency and some drops. There were some players that like Mecole Hardman who didn't catch a pass for 2 or 3 games. You wondered how much they were engaged when they were out there. But I think they found a rhythm and they figured out who they could trust. You know, the pecking order now has become Kelsey, as obviously is the number one, but Juju Smith-Schuster is probably the definitive number two guy if you were looking for somebody from Mahomes to trust. But he's not afraid to throw the football to guys like Justin Watson, who was a special teams player they picked up in the offseason, or Noah Gray or Joey Fortune, backup tight ends, or Jerick McKinnon out of the backfield. You know, when the Bengals played him in that championship game, they rushed 3 or 4 and dropped 7 or 8 in the coverage every down. And it just mystified Mahomes because he couldn't get the place he wanted to. Now he's a lot more comfortable throwing that check down pass and seeing what happens with it.
I talked to Seren Petro from Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City earlier in the show, and we were talking about this topic, and I'll bounce it off of you too. If the Chiefs do end up winning this game and Mahomes is the star, who's his ace receiving in this game? Is it Kelsey or is it somebody else because the Eagles do so much to take Kelsey away?
I think Juju Smith-Schuster is going to have to be the guy for them. And he got banged up in the second half of that championship game, went over the Bengals. But, you know, he's been the most consistent threat outside of Kelsey. You know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling had the big game last couple weeks ago. But he's been up and down, and his hands aren't always the most consistent. So I think it'd be Juju Smith-Schuster. And I think if Mahomes wins a second championship, certainly it adds to his legacy. But I'm one of these people who thinks that if he loses this game, it's not going to hurt him either. He's already proven to be a first ballot Hall of Famer in my mind. I think the numbers and the opportunities to win a championship will still keep coming.
Let's expand on that. How far? How many championships? I mean, we talking Brady territory here? I mean, what's the level of extended success that Mahomes can have, especially as he gets older, because he's so good with his nimble feet and his ability to scamper and keep plays alive, which maybe wasn't something that we saw erode from Brady because it was never all that much of a onus of his game to begin with.
I think I said this, you know, when he started on his first one, I think he wins 2, maybe it's the 3, but I think he wins 2 for sure. And he probably plays in 4, I think along the lines of a Peyton Manning. I don't take for granted how hard it is to win this game. And what Tom Brady did was like next level, you know, other end of the universe type stuff. And just to get 3 championships is a big, big number. I don't think any other, you know, that's pretty much aside what Bradshaw's got 4. And I think there's one of the quarterback who has 4, but that's pretty
Montana,
much. Montana has got 4. Yeah. So that's it. And so if you get to 3, you're in rarefied air. I just feel like people take for granted how much Chris Jones means to this team's success and how much Travis Kelce means to this team's success. And Chris Jones has got 1 year left on his deal. They got to make a big decision about whether they want to pay him a ton of money. He's probably going to want $20 to $25 million a year. And that's a lot to pay for a guy that's going to be 30 years old, that spot. And then Kelce is 33. You know, how many more years is he going to have? He turns 34 this year. How many more years is he going to have playing at that level? So I think once those two players are gone, I don't know who steps into that void, because it's still, you know, you see it in Pittsburgh. You start losing Hall of Fame type players, it's hard to keep winning.
I feel like Mahomes largely has been immune from the is it him or is it the scheme conversation that Brady had a lot when he was playing under Belichick. Like you said, you live there. Is that at all talked about in Kansas City?
Yeah, I mean, there's some of that. I mean, I think people would tell you in Kansas City that he's, you know, he's Michael Jordan, LeBron James, all wrapped into one, and Derek Jeter probably. But but there is an element of, from what I see, that there, you know, he's playing in a great system with a very creative offensive coach who's an all-time great. And, you know, he lost Tyreek Hill, and people have kind of taken this as a chance to say, look, you know, he lost Tyreek Hill. Things are still great. The offense is still great. But if you really watch the games, like, he's had to do a lot more to make it work. And there were games in the middle of the season where he pretty much carried this team to win just off his willpower and his brilliance. It's very hard to play quarterback week in and week out doing that, or year to year for that matter. And so for me, I do think that his early success was his talent, but he also had two Hall of Fame receivers and a Hall of Fame defensive tackle and some really good players around him. I think whoever you are, and this would happen with Brady too. Like the more Brady lost, you know, a key receiver or a key defensive back or whoever it was, the more it affected him in these kinds of games. Not so much in the regular season, but when you got to the championship game where everything was pretty much even. Let's not forget, Tyreek Hill caught a huge pass in that first championship the Chiefs won with Mahomes when they were trailing by 10 in the fourth quarter. So that's where you miss those kind of players.
All right, Jeffrey, last thing. You cover the game from a national perspective, but like you said, you've been immersed in it in Kansas City. What's your vibe? How does this go down? I picked the Eagles. I'm enamored with their defensive front. I think that'll be the difference. How about you?
I'm of the same mindset. You know, the Chiefs, you can't count out Mahomes because of who he is and what he's done in this postseason or what Andy Reid can do with 2 weeks prep time. But I always believe these games are one in the trenches. And every time I watch the Super Bowl, it always gets decided up front. Like, can you protect and can you get after the other team's quarterback? And, you know, 3 years ago, the Chiefs could protect against the Niners pass rush and they won. A year later, they couldn't protect against the Bucs and they lost. I feel like the Eagles do a lot of things very well to get the Chiefs' problem. The pass rush, especially on the edge with Andrew Wiley and Orlando Brown being vulnerable for the Chiefs. The run game, the mobile quarterback, that's always giving them problems. And I'm curious if James Bradbury covers Travis Kelce in this game because he covered him for the Giants last year when the Chiefs played the Giants, and Kelce caught four passes for 27 yards. So I'm going to Eagles with this one.
Jeffrey, great work. Thank you very much. Interesting reads, both those pieces we referenced. I tweeted both of them out. Hope people take the time to read them. It's definitely worthwhile. And thank you so much for lending some insight from out there. I'm glad you could come on.
No problem. Thank you, man.
Jeffrey Jadia from NFL.com and the NFL Network. That's going to do it for us. I'll be back with the Mark Madden Show tomorrow at the Rivers Casino, 3 until 6. We'll talk some hockey with Colby Armstrong. We'll talk some hockey with Seth Rorba. Mark is going to call in at some point tomorrow and Mr. Friday afternoon with all of his gambling picks for the Super Bowl. I've got some excellent props that you're going to want to get in on. If you missed some of the preview that I had with Sorin Petro on that topic, stick around for tomorrow's show throughout because I'm going to dot them in throughout the course of the afternoon and you're going to make some money. I've been good on these in recent years. You're going to make some money. Maybe not enough to afford a pizza on National Pizza Day, but you'll make some money. This is 105.9 The X.